Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined by Prince Jackson, and we are talking about the 2017 movie It. This is one I have been waiting for quite some time, but before we dive in, Prince, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, absolutely. First and foremost, Deanna, thank you so much for having me on. I've been looking so forward to this. A whole bunch of things have happened to have us push things back, but we are here now. I'm super stoked. But I am Prince. I'm the host of Nightlight, a horror movie podcast, and the owner of Good Night Life. With all of that being said, I'm a podcaster from the line of Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network as well. That's pretty much me.
Nice. Love Bloody Disgusting. So I always recommend people check them out for writing, podcasts, everything. So,
absolutely.
You know, there will be links to all of those things in the show notes for everyone. But first, before we dive into the cast, how many times have you watched It?
Oh my God. So when it first came out in 2017, I believed I watched it in theaters maybe 6 or 7 times.
Wow.
And after that, I immediately pre-ordered it, and it was just like, okay, I need this movie in my life. I'm still waiting for that supercut. The Muschietti's are taking their sweet time with that supercut. I'm still waiting for it. But with all of that, I think probably close to maybe around 30 or 40. I've seen this movie a lot.
That's like 10 times more than I have seen it. But for me, it's been really hard to justify rewatching things when I've been watching so many things for this podcast. And I host another weekly podcast called Welcome to Geekdom. For anyone who doesn't know, that's about all the other nerd things that are not Stephen King. So, you know, I've been watching the new Marvel movies, DC stuff. Some of those have been rewatches as well. I think this was the third time I had seen this. And I never really went to the movies a ton as a kid, so that was more of a thing I started doing when, like, MoviePass came out and now AMC A-List. Right. So yeah. I don't even remember watching this in theaters, but I feel like I must have because I saw It Chapter 2 in theaters and I rewatched it on digital before going to see It Chapter 2. So I was like, okay, I definitely saw it before this because this is a rewatch. I'm pretty sure it was in theaters, but I have no recollection of it. So then I rewatched it a third time for this podcast. And it is one that is just so easy to rewatch. It's like you could just have this on in the background all the time, which might seem creepy for some people, but probably not anyone listening to this podcast. So that's fine.
It's funny you say that because I actually needed to come into my studio earlier today and I just threw it on. I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to have this playing in the background because I needed to actually nail up more acoustic foam. And I was like, I'll just have this playing in the background. Why not? And like, I actually didn't look at the screen at all and I knew what was happening just like from me hearing it. And I was like, this is just like auditory visual for me. This is great. Like, I knew exactly where I was at. Like, I knew when Ben was inside of the library. I knew when he was meeting with the actual bullies and things like that. Henry Bowers and his gang. So like I knew exactly where everything was just by like auditory sensory.
Yeah. And it's just one of those that it's not necessarily like a really good time because of the story that's being told, but you just can't help but like constantly want to spend time with these kids. And speaking of these kids, we might as well dive into the cast here real quick because I was reading the Stephen King at the Movies book just prior to us hopping on this call here, and they described the kids as like anti-Disney ragamuffins. And I was like, this is like the perfect description of these kids because, you know, anyone who has caught a glimpse of a Disney TV show, it's like all of those kids are very well put together and they seem to have like that good lives and things
so
like
true.
That.
Oh my Whereas, God, I haven't even thought of that.
The Losers Club, it's like the complete opposite. And it's not like there aren't good parts of Maine, you know?
Right.
It's just these kids all come from sort of like broken families in one way or another. You have, you know, Jaden Martell playing Bill Denborough, Jeremy Ray Taylor as Ben Hanscom, Sophia Lillis as Beverly Marsh, Finn Wolfhard as Richie Tozier, Chosen Jacobs as Mike Hanlon, Jack Dylan Grazer as Eddie Kasprak, Wyatt Olef as Stanley Uris, and then, you know, Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise, of course, not one of the children, but, you know.
Yeah.
That's your Losers Club and Pennywise, and then you have Nicholas Hamilton as Henry Bowers, Jake Sim as Belch, Logan Thompson as Victor Chris, Owen Teague as Patrick Hockstetter, and Jackson Robert Scott, even as Georgie Denborough. It's like all of these kids have gone on to do a lot of different things. Or, right. You know, I had just seen, you know, like Owen Teague, I think, was in Bloodline or something, some Netflix show I was watching.
Yeah, he's also in The Empty Man as well.
Okay, that's a new thing that I've been seeing pop up that I need to watch.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so good. I watched it recently. But anyway, yeah. But it's crazy because most of these kids now, like, obviously, when this first came out, a lot of people was like, oh, this is a ripoff of Stranger Things. It was like, okay, first of all, what? Like, it came out in 1990 as a miniseries. And before that, there was literally a novel, but that came out 20 years prior. But with all of that, like with Finn Wolfhard of being the person he was at this time and who he is now, I guess, it's really cool to see them all kind of go to do these more incredible roles now. Like, I'm seeing Jack Dylan Grazer, how he, in my opinion, was probably my favorite character as Eddie in this.
He was so little.
He was so tiny. And now, like, him seeing him in Shazam and seeing him in that one show, I believe, by the guy who made the remake of Suspiria. But I'm blanking on what that show is called. But that was a pretty good show. But he's in that as well. Like, he plays a very, very intense role. But it's so interesting to see him now and just to see how he is. We Are Who We Are, that's the name of the show. But it's so cool to see how these kids just have grown and just have expanded to so many different cooler projects and stuff like that, and kind of seeing their starts with It, or I guess with Finn Wolfhard with Stranger Things. But still, like, it's just really, really cool to see it.
Yeah. And some of the kids, like Chosen Jacobs, was in Hawaii 5-0 briefly, which is like a huge network show before it ended, obviously. And,
right.
You know, I was rewatching this and my mom was in the room and she was like, that's that kid, right? Like, but, you know, Sophia Lillis too, taking on the role of Nancy Drew and just everything else that she's done since this. And, you know, 2017 wasn't that long ago, but some of these kids have grown like 8 feet. And I'm like,
right.
Like, how did you have this growth spurt? I'm still waiting for mine.
I am too, actually. But it's interesting you even say that, because like seeing someone like Chosen Jacobs, who was, I think, 17 when this movie came out, like it's crazy to even think that, because in my opinion he almost looked just as young as Eddie.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, they all like really just grew up to just do these different things. And even Jackson Robert Scott, like, I love that kid so much, and I think he's so fantastic, and he's just such a bright light in all of this, but he's oddly insanely creepy. Like, and I don't understand how he can be this creepy. And I wish Pet Sematary would have had him in there as well, like to be Gage. Like, yeah. I thought he would have been perfect for that, because he knows how to be scary, and I love it.
Yeah, it's funny because he's, you know, in Lock and Key, WandaVision.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
And, you know, The Prodigy, obviously, is kind of where that creepy factor
right.
comes in.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that just yet, but I remember seeing the trailer and I was like, no, sir, Georgie, you can't do that.
I tried getting through that one. I wasn't the biggest fan, but I love this kid. I really want to see him do a lot more stuff, because I feel like he's just really, really good. But even Jeremy Ray Taylor. Like, Jeremy Ray Taylor went on to do the reboot of Are You Afraid of the Dark? And that was so cool to see him in that. And he was the horror movie buff and nerd, I guess, in a way, where he would talk and literally name dropping the most, well, obviously for us in the horror genre, not really deep cuts, but like deep cuts for everyone else, where he was like, have you seen The Changeling? And it's just like, wait, what? Did you just really shout out The Changeling in a children's Nickelodeon show? Like, oh my God. And their school was literally named Herbert West Middle School. From Reanimator, and like I lost my mind, and I just thought he was perfect for that role. But Jeremy Ray Taylor is another one where I'm just like, I want to see him in more stuff as well. Just I love these kids so much.
Yeah, running through what they've been into is also reminding me of all the things I still need to watch. Like, Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh my gosh, you have to see it. You have to see it. It's 3 episodes, I think.
Okay.
Total. So like, it's a pretty easy watch, an hour each. And the guy who played in that movie Blindspotting, I'm blanking on his name, but he's the villain. And I was like, okay, I could dig this. And it's just, it's so much fun.
That's good to know that it's only 3 episodes. I thought it was like a full season thing. And I'm like, okay, now that you've told me that, I can go watch it.
Yeah. Kind of like a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's nice. It's an easy watch.
Yeah. And the adults are almost non-existent in this. I mean, you have Beverly's dad, who is something else.
Yes.
I don't have a better way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, and they definitely didn't go as far as they could have, for sure, because the novel definitely turns that up to 15, and it's just like, oh my God, I hate reading her section so much. It breaks my heart.
Yeah, there are certain things in the novel that just don't need to be adapted.
100%. It was surprising that it was adapted in 1990, for example.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Mr. Marsh, Officer Bowers, not good dads.
Nope.
There are no good dads in this. I mean,
no good dads.
To be fair, Mr. Denborough, you know.
He's grieving.
So you kind of give him a pass, and he's just like, you know what? Enough. Can we?
Right.
Move on. And you know, kids, they don't listen, so
yeah, very true.
But Bill Skarsgård puts on an amazing performance as Pennywise. It's one of my favorite things I think I've seen in most of the Stephen King adaptations, to be honest. I mean,
I'm gonna have to agree.
I love, you know, Jack Torrance in The Shining, played by Jack Nicholson, as many people do. Terrible adaptation based on the source material, you know, but I think a lot of King adaptations are really good at bringing out these iconic performances in actors and actresses. You know, Kathy Bates is Annie Wilkes. I mean,
oh my God, yes. Kathy Bates's performance as Annie Wilkes is absolutely God tier. But I'm with you when it comes to Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise.
Yeah.
Because he has this persona that feels unnatural. And it makes it feel very articulate, I feel like. Like you can tell that, like, okay, he genuinely practiced all of this. And don't get me wrong, I love Tim Curry as Pennywise, but Tim Curry, his performance felt like Tim Curry. Like, it felt like something you would get from Tim Curry. But Bill Skarsgård just had such a different interaction and a different take that I feel like was warranted for him to play Pennywise. Like, with the shifting of the eyes, and I don't mean the colors, I mean literally his eyes just shifting apart, and how that was actually something he can literally do. And I'm just like, you're weird, dude. Like, you're weird. Like, but with that in mind, and that particular concept of how Bill Skarsgård took on this role, and how he actually went to the audition in just complete clown garb, and how he would kind of get in the mindset of Pennywise. He would laugh at other people or in different cars just so he can like seem maniacal and seem crazy, and so he can get the laugh down. And I was like, what? That, like, you're blowing my mind right now on how you became Pennywise. And it's just, oh, love it. Love it.
You can tell that he really embodied the role, because when we see him again in Castle Rock, he's playing a very different character in a very different way. And I always love it when people return to King, as far as, you know, cast and crew go, because you just get to see so many different characters and how they take on these roles. You know, you had Julianne Moore recently in Lisey's Story, and yes. she was previously in the 2013 Carrie. There's four Carrie movies, and I don't know why, but
there's way too many Carrie movies. But yes, you're correct. She was Margaret White.
Yeah, and those are two very, very different performances as well. I think I prefer her in Lisey's Story, which, you know, that's for a future episode. But
fair enough.
It's just, you know, Kathy Bates just takes it to a next level as Annie Wilkes, but she's still great as Dolores Claiborne too.
Yes. Yes. I never truly even thought about that until you said something right now, Deanna. Like, it seriously, the way that they take these roles and the way that they actually are able to kind of separate themselves from their previous role blows my mind. And I love that. I love the fact that they have this kind of return to King and the way that they are an attestment to how King's work is presented on screen. It's so fascinating to see all of that work just trickle down and being moved on to certain areas and things like that. And I mean, I'm always down for King adaptions. Like, I love King adaptions. No matter what it is, I'm supporting it. And even Dark Tower, like, I'm still supporting it. Like, but with all of these characters in It Chapter One, I would love to see them come back. I would love to see Sophia Lillis come back. And if they ever do a Cujo remake of some kind, I know she's obviously... she's young, but I feel like if we were to do some type of reimagining of Cujo, I feel like she would be so good for something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I could totally see her doing that, or Jane Levy. I mean, but that's just me being completely biased on wanting Jane Levy completely back into horror, but besides the point. But I would just love to see most of these characters come back. I would love to see Finn come back. I would love to see Jade Martell come back. I would love to see Chosen in more things as well, because I honestly can't place my finger on too many things that he's in, but I would love to see him come back into a bunch of stuff as well.
Yeah, I expect we will see many Stephen King remakes down the line, because we're already getting a bunch. You know, you had mentioned the 2019 Pet Sematary, and
yes,
you know, we're getting a Pet Sematary prequel, and then, you know, we're getting something like Chapel Wait.
Oh my gosh.
You know, that's on now-ish, I believe. And, you know, there's just so much King in the works right now too, and stuff we don't even know anything about really, other than like someone's name is attached to it, and that's it.
Right. Yeah, like Salem's Lot, for perfect example. Like, we're getting a new Salem's Lot from James Wan's studio, and I'm like losing my mind because of it. And I'm just like, ooh, this is going to be bloody. I can't wait. Like,
yeah.
Like, I really want another Salem's Lot, because Barlow's one of my favorite characters in King lore altogether. And I love Barlow so much.
And the 2004 remake left something to be desired. Let's just put it that way.
Very true.
But, you know, if you're familiar with King, you're probably already familiar going into this movie with the story. And, right. You know, a lot of people pointed out, hey, the miniseries came out in 1990. This came out in 2017. That's 27 years, roughly, you know. And I don't think that was entirely on purpose, but I love that it happened anyway, because the story is that Pennywise returns every 27 years. And right. The book has it in the 50s and the 80s. And, you know, some people are like, oh, I wish they would have, you know, done the back and forth thing like the book does, and, you know, introduced the adults sooner. But I think because of the essence of these characters and, you know, the Losers Club just has this vibe that makes you want to spend time with them. It's no different than, you know, we've mentioned Stranger Things here, because that takes place in the 80s, which slightly different vibe than the late 50s, but, you know, roughly still the same in small town America.
100%. And I don't think the process of how the book plays, where it's pretty much played in flashbacks, and with the book playing like that, or I shouldn't even say playing like that, reading like that, I don't feel like that would have worked as well on screen. And I like the fact that we kind of go this route. And It Chapter 2 gets a little muddy, but you'll probably talk about that at a later time, I'm sure, probably after this. Yeah. But with It Chapter 1, like, it has such a tight knit, and it really makes us fall in absolute love with these kids. And, like, you just, you care for them, and you want to nourish them and be there for them. And that, I think that is what makes It Chapter 1 so special, on the way that these children are treated. And like how you said, like, a lot of them come from broken homes, even if they don't know they're coming from a particular broken home. And mm-hmm. I think the only home we don't get any reference to is Richie Tozer. And I think that that's the only person, like, we don't see any aspect of their home life at all, if I'm not mistaken, in Chapter 1. Does that sound correct to you?
Yeah, because, like, Wyatt, you have the church scene.
Right.
Ben, we do go to his house, but we don't really see any family. It's like the New Kids on the Block poster, you know? Right. But he kind of mentions it, like, he's the new kid in town, so he doesn't know anyone, so he has that whole thing going on, and we don't need to necessarily know anything about his family. And you have Eddie's mom being also strange, not as strange as Beverly's dad, but, you know, so it seems like, really, before Georgie's death, Bill kind of came from the most put together home, almost.
That's what it seemed like.
But that quickly falls apart.
Very true.
For good reason, to be fair.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Very, very true. I wish they would have talked about the mom's grieving process a little bit more, because her grieving process in the book was just so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Of how she stooped so low into a depression that she closed herself off to her whole family and things like that. And that was, like, hinted in this, where it's just like, don't let your mom see this, when Mr. Dunbarrow was talking to Bill. And I wish we would have just known more, because that opening sequence of Pennywise with Georgie would have had so much more impact if we would have known, because we do get those hints in the book of where it's, well, not even hints, like, it's very blatant in the book of Pennywise changing his eyes to blue to fit Georgie's mom's eye color, versus in the actual film, they're blue, but we just assume that's just Pennywise eyes when they're not yellow or amber. So, like, it's very interesting to kind of, like, see that. And I love that little nod to the fans of the book, where it's just like, oh, holy shit, that is totally, like, a fun nod to the book. And I think that's a very clever way of interacting the book and weaving it into the story, for, like, us fans of the book. And it's just like, oh, closet fan over here, like, or I'm very out of the closet when it comes to Stephen King, for sure. But when you see that in this story, it just feels impactful for a fan of the source material. But I would love for everyone to be able to enjoy that, so they could see that Georgie was comfortable with Pennywise because of his eye color. But I'm probably jumping slightly ahead here to some of the Easter eggs and such, but my apologies.
No, you're good, because I think these things are just so intertwined with the movie that, you know, you have all of the turtles that pop up, and, you know,
yes,
just all of these nods to the book that don't necessarily need to be explained, because, you know, it's not the focus of the story that, you know, this all connects to the Dark Tower, as many Stephen King things do. And, you know, to go back to the date thing real quick, because, you know, I mentioned how, like, the 50s and 80s, despite being a few decades apart, don't really feel that different, especially in the book and in Maine and small town USA, you know?
Right.
So for you, did it even make a difference that this took place in 88 instead of 58?
It didn't. It didn't make too much of a difference for me personally. When I saw that the date was going to be in the 80s, I was just like, okay, that's interesting that they're choosing that route. And I actually personally thought they were going to go backwards, where we start with the adults first, and kind of be more of the source material. And then when I saw the kids, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I feel like that's super interesting. And granted, in the 50s, I mean, with racism way more prevalent, and that very heavily pictured in the book as well. With that particular depiction, I thought that was really interesting to see how the 80s transitioned that to being a little bit more... soft is the wrong word, but I don't know the right word to choose, but a little softer, a little bit more tamed compared to how...
It wasn't as harsh.
Exactly. Like, where we get... Perfect example is when we get Henry Bowers going up to... I guess he doesn't really go up to him. Like, they're driving and they're almost about to hit Mike.
In the alleyway?
Yeah. And I feel like with something like that particular scene, like, he just blatantly says, stay out of my town. And, like... In the book, he's way more vicious to Mike, and Mike is treated terribly in the book. And with that, like, one, being a product of the time, and two, I think Andy Muschietti probably didn't want to touch that aspect too much of the racism that was depicted in there. And I mean, granted, 2017 was a very intense year for horror. Like, we got Get Out, we got It Chapter One, and so on and so forth. So it probably wouldn't looked great if Andy Muschietti would have added so much racism into it. But Mike was treated like shit. Like, I mean, that is just a part of that. And I wish he would have leaned a little harder into that in Chapter Two, because Mike stayed and Mike was treated like a freaking third class citizen when he stayed. But it would have been cool of him, like, crashing the detective's scenes and things like that. So, like, it would have been cool to see that. But major spoilers for the book, everyone. But it's so interesting to kind of see all of that transitioned into the 80s to be a little bit more tamed, not as harsh as you put it, for sure. But don't get me wrong, they're still assholes. Like, absolutely. Bowers and his gang are absolute assholes, and they're complete trash. But it's just, I think the 80s was a good choice to be able to escape from some of the things that were a little bit harder to talk about.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask you about Mike in particular, because I feel like he's the most underused of the Losers Club.
I agree.
If I'm remembering correctly, it took almost half of the movie for him to even become part of the Losers Club. And
that's correct.
You know, because of all the points you just made, it felt like without leaning into that more, they just didn't have enough for Mike to do, which is a little disappointing, because, you know, he ends up becoming a librarian. But in this, it's Ben, who is deeply interested in being at the library and learning everything he can about Derry.
Yes.
And I almost feel like maybe they could have given that stuff to Mike, even if it doesn't line up with the book, but just because of where he ends up and we know he stays and all of this stuff, it would make a little more sense. He was the one interested in it, because, you know, as someone who moved to a new place in 2019, I did not immediately go to the library and start looking everything up about Colorado that I could find.
Fair enough. As of, why would you?
Yeah.
I completely 100% agree. I've always said that Ben and Mike's role should have been flopped. And not so much as Mike being the new kid in town, but Mike being the kid who goes to the library on his off time, because one, he's homeschooled. So him being homeschooled, it makes a lot more sense for him to go to the library. And on top of that being homeschooled, he also pretty much has this life of where his parents pretty much died in front of him. So learning a little bit more history of behind, maybe possibly finding out his family tree a little bit more and things like that. Like, it just made more sense for Mike to be in the shoes of Ben when it comes to him learning the history of Derry and initially being the person who figures out how to save Derry. So he was definitely in the shadows quite a bit. And it's a bummer, because I even checked on Google and he's not on the first search. Like, you have to click view all in order to even see him pop up for the Losers Club. And I was like, that sucks. Like, everyone else is here, including Bill Skarsgård, and yet Mike is, like, in there. So it's like it bums me out to see how underused he was in Chapter One, And I feel like they tried to make up for that in chapter two, but I think it just, it came off as he was the crazy guy in chapter two. And that was also a bummer, where I was just like, oh no, like he becomes the librarian. Like he even in chapter two, it was a nod to him being the librarian because they go to the library. But like with all of that, like it just makes me, it makes me sad that like he got used this way, and this is how his script was changed to fit a more less racial mode. But it's interesting because like I feel like Mike was such a powerful character, and he was supposed to be, he was technically the hero, but hey, you know, he's the one who figured out the rights and kind of the leans of Matrin and things like that. So, well.
Yeah, I think that's definitely my biggest critique of this movie is how Mike was handled, because
I agree.
Especially for 2017, it was kind of disappointing for it to turn out that way for his character, because it's not that we don't see him in the first half of the movie. It pretty much opens with him, you know?
Right, yeah,
and then
absolutely.
It's just like he kind of dips out, disappears, and then you're like, oh, okay, he's back again. Now he's part of the club. And, you know, despite that, I still really, really love this movie. And, you know, I don't think anyone I know compared it to, like, being like Stranger Things. In my mind,
good.
It's definitely one of those things where people, at least King fans, think of it more like Stand By Me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm right there with you. I picture this more as Stand By Me with supernatural elements.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's how the books, well, the book doesn't read like Stand By Me. Not
still
in
dead bodies, means, you know,
but
it's
right.
Close.
Sewers, poking sticks, asking other kids, do you want to see a dead body? But it is so interesting to kind of have this pictured as Stand By Me. And I would say like this is a mixture between Stand By Me, The Goonies, and in some ways Lost Boys. Like it pictures so well. And it, for me personally, like that is the perfection of how it was able to use the 80s. And I'm right there with you. Like all the stuff of Mike and how Mike is technically the token black guy trope, I still very much appreciate what this movie did, especially for horror, because I mean, it's one of the top horror films of all time. I think it's actually the top horror film of all time still, with $705 million of a box office, which is insane. Like, we don't see that for horror. And for that alone, like, I'm just like, mad props. I definitely am a huge fan of them being able to keep that. And I wish they would have been able to keep more of that momentum for chapter two, because in my opinion, they should have just filmed chapter one and two together. But I mean, I get it, contracts and such, let's see how this movie does. But yeah.
Yeah, because there was clearly more to the stories, you know. They could have left it there and it would have been okay, because the movie works by itself. You don't need chapter two in order to understand chapter one. You definitely need chapter one in order to understand chapter two, though.
Very true.
Don't recommend watching that one on its own.
Definitely. I'm right there with you. A question that I did have for you, with the aspect of chapter two having the relationship between Eddie and Richie, did that come across as a queer relationship inside of chapter one to you?
Not really. And I think part of that at least has to do with how young these characters are, that anything they're feeling just seems like intense friendship a lot of the time. Unless, obviously, you know, you have your Ben, Bev, and Bill triangle going on there, and she's kind of trying to figure out which of the boys like left her this little note, and she thinks it's Bill. So, you know, the fact that she thought it was Bill kind of hints at that a little more than hinting at her and Ben necessarily. And I think because that was sort of the quote unquote relationship that a lot of people focused on, just because they made it so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Even on a couple rewatches of this now, I wasn't really picking up on the Eddie Richie thing other than them being good friends.
Yeah. And I'm right there with you. And I love the fact that Eddie and Richie were supposed to be like this. That does honestly seem like a really cool touch. I just feel like with chapter two, because from a couple of my friends in the queer community, they all felt that was shoehorned in just because. And because I think it was just hinted inside of the novel, but it wasn't really like leaned on. But I can't even really truly remember that, to be completely honest with you. But I was even this time watching it, I was even trying to actually look at the bridge scene with Henry and Ben. And I was trying to see like if I found their initials or something like that, because he carves it technically inside of chapter two. And I was like, I was trying to find it, and I couldn't find it at all. So I was just like, I don't know if it was like a last minute decision or what, but I don't know. I was trying to figure that one out. I was definitely trying to figure that one out for sure.
I couldn't really pick up on it because I did remember that from it chapter two. And I was like,
right,
you know, I'm not really seeing this because they're so focused on Beverly and, you know, Ben and Bill. And I just wasn't really getting any of those vibes from any of it's like they were joking around like kids do. So I didn't pick up on anything other than that, really. So, you know, I am glad you asked that, though, because I think it's something that was very hit or miss with a lot of people, probably more miss than hit overall. Yeah. But like you said, there was some weird scheduling stuff that was done and some interesting choices made in between the movies, obviously. But with It Chapter One, they just really captured that coming of age essence. And
absolutely,
they nailed that. They nailed the tone of the movie. The settings are so good.
So good. So good. Every aspect of the way that this movie is honestly set up is perfect. And I think that's why I have such a connection with it, because is it my favorite Stephen King movie? No, definitely not. But it is so fun to watch, and it's actually a funny movie too. Like, it's really funny, and it is genuinely like pretty creepy in moments. And like, I'm a sucker for glowing eyes. That's like my thing. So like, anytime I see glowing eyes anywhere, I'm all in. And we open with technically glowing marbles, but still, that counts for me. But like, when I see something like that, I really just have such a fascination with it, because I just like it, for me, I want to have this suspension of disbelief. And when you add glowing eyes into the equation, usually your suspension of disbelief just flies out of the window. And for this, like, this felt supernaturally real. And you get the moment where Pennywise, one of my favorite moments of Pennywise actually appearing, when Mike is about to go inside of the butcher shop. And right before he gets hit, pretty much, Pennywise does the whole thing with his parents and the burning building and so on and so forth. But when that door opens and you hear the bleeding lamb, pretty much, and I'm just like, oh my God. And when he turns around, you get the symphony of those creepy kids. And then he opens his eyes, and I'm just like, oh my God. I melt every time, because I haven't had something that has creeped up my spine like that in a very long time. And I think still, like, nothing's has come close to that for me. And it's just something about that scene. And it's so simple. He's just waving. Like, it's he's not doing anything, but it's something about it that's so effective to me about that particular scene. And I think when it comes to that aspect of horror, you get this very guttural feeling that you want to kind of release, like, whether it be a scream, whether it be like a gasp, or whether it be nothing, whether you just be like, it just sheer terror, like, you just need something to release that. And for me, it's like these tingles on my spine where I'm just like, that is so creepy. And this movie has two of those moments for me, where you have the library scene and just another person in the library staring at Ben as he watches as he looks at this book for the history of Old Town Derry. And I love the fact that she's not even focused on, like, if you see it,
I picked up on that this time too. I was like, that woman is staring at him.
Yes. And she's smiling, and it's great.
Yeah.
And like, I love that moment, because when I first saw that moment, I saw it in theaters, the very first watch, and I lost it. And I'm looking at everyone else in, around the theaters around me. I'm like, why is nobody else losing their mind at this person right now? And like, I even asked random people, was just like, hey, library scene, did you notice the woman staring at him? And like, the librarian? I'm like, no, like, it was just a random woman. And they're like, no. And I was like, okay, that's why no one freaked out like me, because I thought it, like, that moment always gets me, and I love it so much, because the genius behind that scene is, like, something creepy is already happening in the foreground. Like, we see that he's looking at this book, we have the chorus of the children coming in, and we're getting to the point with the severed head and things like that, and that's all great eye candy for us to be creeped out. But just in case if that's not enough, and the people who are just looking around, just like, I really want to inspect this whole scene, there's something for you in the background too. And that is just genius to me. And I just, I'm absolutely in awe, like muttering my words right now of how amazing that scene is. And I've seen this movie so many times, and yet it still gets me.
Yeah, that's when you know something is really good, though. I feel like there are certain Stephen King adaptations that you can just watch over and over again and still find something new when you watch it. And
absolutely,
that is what this movie is for me. This is probably, it's not the one I've watched the most, because I think I somehow have also seen Secret Window 3 times. I don't know how that one happened, but it did. And, you know, it's one of those movies where you have everything coming together. You know, you see things kind of fall apart a little more in It Chapter 2, not only for the characters, but just, you know, because of the gap between them and, you know, the kids' growth spurts that I don't understand.
Yeah, and you could definitely tell Andreas Muschietti didn't have much time with It Chapter 2 to really flush that out the probably the way that he wanted to.
I will say, rewatching Chapter 1, there was only one scene that didn't hold up quite as well for me as far as the effects go, and that is when they're in the garage watching the projector and Pennywise comes out of the wall. I was like, that looks a little funky now.
Yeah, I even thought that was actually pretty funky back in 2017, and I thought, was like, oh man, this movie has a lot of CG. And even I think another scene for me that takes me out of it is when they're actually in the sewer, and when Pennywise, actually it's not them, it's just Bev, when she's in the sewer and Pennywise is dancing on the stage, and like when he's doing the little dance, I'm just like, why does that look so odd? And like, I really looked at it, I was like, oh, it's a green screen. Like, oh, like it is. And like, you could just tell like when something felt off. And like, granted, you can chop up the fact that it's Pennywise is very cartoony. And that can go with like maybe helping your suspension of disbelief. Sure. But it didn't help mine. Like it definitely took me out of it. And I remember when I first watched it, I did not like this movie. I was just like, I was a complete bashful hater of it, and it was just like, I don't like this movie. And it wasn't until the second time I watched it when someone else wanted to watch it with me, and I was like, okay, I understand. I love this movie. Like, I get it. But like, previously when I first watched it, I was like, I was not a fan. I was so upset because I was such a purist of the 1990 miniseries, and I was so upset that like they had it even filmed in 1988, and I was bitter. I was just like a bitter old man about it. But I'm glad that like I came to terms. But my favorite Stephen King adaptation is Dr. Sleep. And it's just, I actually was hoping no one had it on your list when you first hit me up for it, but someone had it, and I was like, oh, my heart.
I feel like this movie and that movie were like the two that everyone wanted, and I was like, oh no, what have I done?
I could completely understand that, because Dr. Sleep was definitely one that I was searching for on your list. I was like, oh, okay. But it's funny, because even the Losers Club podcast, they also wanted me, and I was like, I want Dr. Sleep, and you guys aren't even like close to that until 2023, I think. So it's like,
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah, They're doing everything, just like yourself, actually. But like, they're.
I think they take breaks to like cover the new stuff. Like they go episode by episode, and they're doing like that Castle Rock season 3 thing right now. And I knew about that podcast when I started this, and one of the first things I saw was that they had like a 4-hour episode on it, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to do that, so I don't have to feel bad about also doing this idea.
Yeah, do not. Do not feel bad about it. Not at all. But yes, they definitely did. But I told Mike, and I was like, I don't know if I can do this show if it's going to be that long. That's a lot of my time. But it's cool, though, to have myself on this, on your show. So thank you so much for inviting me on. I honestly was honored that you even wanted me to be on this. So very stoked about that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I was thrilled that you wanted to discuss this one. And I was doing my best with the spreadsheet. I was like, okay, hope I don't make anyone mad. We're just gonna, you know.
No, not at all. You nailed that spreadsheet. It's a perfect, flawless spreadsheet. I saw 3 of them on there where I was just like, okay, I would love to do that. We'll love to do that. We'll love to do that. And then I saw was just like, oh, okay. Like a few folks already had them where like, I think I saw The Outsider. Someone had that one and The Institute. And I was like, oh, I would love to do The Institute. And as soon as you told me about it, I was like, I'd love to do The Institute. No one talks about it. Like, let's do The Institute. And then I saw the list. I was like, oh, The Institute's taken.
Yeah, what I tried to do was like, every new person who wanted to do an episode, I was like, okay, I'll give you one to start. And then, you know, this way I made sure everyone was covered. And, you know, so far that has worked out. Everyone who signed up got one. But, you know, It Chapter One was one that I was really excited for because I feel like this was somewhat of a turning point for King adaptations because you have this, you have Gerald's Game, you have some really good stuff. I mean, 2017 was a wild year because you have
so insane,
so many things. You have The Dark Tower, which I don't know how that came out the same year as this, to be honest. You know, like I said, Gerald's Game. And then, you know, there's the Dr. Sleep movie coming soon for the podcast. It's already out, obviously, but just coming up soon for the podcast. And it's just, you know, this is definitely one of my favorites of the recent stuff. And in general, really, because it just captures everything I was hoping it would capture of the Losers Club, with, you know, the exception we mentioned with Mike being underused earlier, but it still captured Mike's essence as a kid too.
Absolutely. I agree. Like it definitely captured how lonely he felt. And like, I love how accepting the Losers Club was to him. And I like the fact that he felt like he had an in. And the interesting thing behind Mike, like they still allowed him to kind of be the historian in some ways, where like he talked about, like he knew about pretty much Pennywise in general before they all knew about him. And when he started talking about Pennywise and he used the terminology or the analogy of cicadas and how they kind of sprout up every so often. And I was like, that is so genius that like he kind of had this interaction of knowing what this being was and from the stories that his grandfather has told him and things like that. And that's so cool that he is kind of still the historian, but at the same time, I was like, but I want you to lean harder. Like I want him to be the full historian, but it's still completely fine because I love the fact that he is still utilized. He's not completely underutilized in some ways. He's still utilized. He's not overutilized, but at the same time, he is still used and he's important. And I like the fact that he is still important.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we mentioned the Pennywise eyes, the turtles, and, you know, I thought they did some fun little things with those and, you know, a couple other things here and there. But Prince, is there anything else you want to discuss before we dive into ratings and wrap up here?
Yeah. One last thing that I find super cool, but at the same time, a little lame. But the usage of Georgie being the puppeteer, I love that whole aspect of Georgie being the main focus of why Bill is forcing all of his friends to do this, because none of them want to do this.
Yeah.
But with the usage of Georgie, and when we kind of get our first turtle reference with the Lego set, and how he drops it on the ground, and when he goes into the basement, it's flooded. I love the use of Georgie there. And I don't know if you remember the trailer to It Chapter One, but they show that moment in the trailer, but it's all Georgie. And Pennywise is there. He's in the water and he's kind of mouthing it as well. But with the changing of his voice inside of the actual film, I was so bummed that they did that, because Georgie was so more effective with not having his voice altered, in my opinion. Like, because it felt like, oh shit, this is your brother talking to you like this. Like, this is not a being talking to you. This is your brother. And I love that. I love the aspect of that. But I still say the bringing Georgie up and smacking him down into the water just so Pennywise can chase him, that was absolute just fantastic for me. And I was just like, that's great. Definitely love that.
Yeah. And they kind of revisit that again in the sewers, where, yes, you know, we get Georgie and, you know, he's missing the arm and he's, yes, talking to Bill, and you can really see Bill trying to fight it because he's been through this before already, you know.
Right.
It came full circle with that. And you know, that whole scene too, obviously we should probably at least give it a mention, just because, you know, it's a pretty big deal. But just the fact that Bill goes through that again, and this time all of his friends are there with him, watching him go through it, I think that was the moment they all needed to just be like, you know what, we're down here, this is it, this is what we, yep, have to do. And, you know, that was sort of them just deciding to all in that moment go all out, do everything they can. They were like, yes, we need to kill this clown. And the way they start talking to Pennywise, yes, I was like, yes, okay, this is fantastic. And, you know, we talked about some of the CGI earlier that didn't necessarily work for us. And I will just say, at least none of it was like Tim Curry's Pennywise going down the drain.
That is true. Or turning into the spider.
Which, you know, 27 years prior, you know, we can forgive, right, them for that too. But, you know, I think the way they had Pennywise sort of shrinking down that well in this,
yes,
you know, it wasn't exactly like that Tim Curry going down the drain scene, but it just kind of had that same feeling to it.
Yes, absolutely.
Except this was a triumphant feeling, not a, oh no, where's he going feeling.
Right, that's true. Yes, and I completely agree. Like, this felt like they were close to winning. And I even do want to mention the deadlights as well, where a lot of people who either aren't fans of the novel or read the novel or just want to just watch the movie to watch the movie. I know that was a big thing that was brought up of like, what are those orbs pretty much? And I love that we see the deadlights every single time he changes his eyes to amber. Those are the deadlights. Like, I love that. I love the fact that we get the deadlights very often. And I wish, well, I don't wish, because I feel like if they would have leaned too hard on what the deadlights are, then now we're stepping into Dark Tower territory, then we're going to have to get the Crimson King in this soon, and who knows how many movies we're going to have with all that. But we need to get a new gunslinger. Something needs to happen, because Idris Elba was perfect for that role. It just was poorly written.
Yeah, yeah. I just did that episode recently.
Oh, did you? Oh, my God.
And oh, it was something else.
Something. It was something.
Yeah.
That is definitely something that, I guess, perturbed me. But when you get something like where you have the deadlights that are kind of, I guess, sourced into here a little bit, and enough for us to kind of have Bev show how powerful Bev was as well, because Bev did not go insane and Bev did not die. So, like, and that was the whole concept of the deadlights. Once you see them, you either go insane or you die. And that didn't happen to Bev. And I wish we would have seen, like that shows you how powerful Bev actually is. And it's crazy. It's awesome. I honestly, I love this fucking movie.
Yeah, it seems like every time that I've rewatched it, granted not as many times as you, kind of love it even more. And it's easy to kind of gloss over some of the CGI stuff that maybe doesn't stand up, especially since I've been watching stuff from like the 70s, 80s, and 90s prior to this. I'm just like, okay, they can do a lot more with movies now, and I'm going to give them a little more leeway because there was definitely some bad CGI in The Dark Tower too.
Yes, there was.
I think overall this movie just does a really fantastic job of telling the stories of these kids. And, you know, for me, this is a 4.5 out of 5. I have a few movies I do want to go back and revisit because I feel like I maybe was a little harsher on them because of how they looked and like when they came out. Like Stand By Me, not a vibrant movie like this.
Right.
But also have to consider the time period, which I still love that movie too. But, you know, I'm going to do this crazy thing and go through and like rank everything. I have like a spreadsheet set up with like different criteria because, you know, I just give my letterbox score here. So, you know, that's kind of just like the overall. And so I'm going to take into account the letterbox score, how much fun it was, and rewatchability. So this obviously is going to score pretty high in all three. But there are some that like I enjoyed them. They were fine, but I'm never going to rewatch them probably. Right. And then there's some things like, you know, Maximum Overdrive, really fun, silly, stupid watch.
So silly.
And it definitely has a bit of a rewatchability factor. Terrible movie.
Yes, 100%. I would love for a friend of mine from the Dead Meat podcast, Chelsea Rebecca, she really, really wants the rights to that. She really wants the rights to that. I'm just like, please give it to her. Because I would love to see Maximum Overdrive just go balls to the wall. Like, I would love to see that again, but in a more modern setting. But I am going to agree with you. I also give this a 4.5 out of 5. And mainly based off of how much fun I have with this movie. And it's not perfect, but I don't think any movie truly is perfect, to be completely honest. Although, me being biased, I think Dr. Sleep is a 5 out of 5. I'm just going to say that now. But but with this particular movie, like I do find it to be quite a flawless like interpretation of what we can have for Pennywise now. And I loved every aspect of this movie, and I think this movie is just a great ride, and it's a fun party movie as well. Even though it's long, like it's a really cool movie to throw on with friends and to just watch with a couple of your buddies and just enjoying some snacks and just enjoying each other's company while watching It Chapter One. Like it's that type of movie, and I think that that rules.
Yeah, and it really feels like you don't get that with a lot of horror movies. You obviously have your staples like Halloween, where you'll watch that with friends all the time.
Of
you know,
course. Right.
Basically, like the big franchises are sort of those kinds of movies. And obviously, you know, Stephen King is kind of his own franchise now. It's just the rights are all over the place with everyone.
That is so true. Yeah. God, he makes so much money.
I can't even fathom how much money he has. I mean, granted, it's not like Jeff Bezos money, but for a writer, I imagine he's one of the richest.
Yeah, that's nuts. I can only assume him and John Connolly are probably the richest writers.
Yeah.
Maybe Tom Clancy, because Tom Clancy does have like the video games and movies and shows too. So maybe Tom Clancy.
Yeah, white men.
Yes, took the words right out of my mouth. 100%.
Good for them, though. Good for them.
Good for them. Yes.
On that 100%. Note, I think that wraps up this episode. Prince, thank you so much for joining me to talk about It.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a blast, and you know, I know the spreadsheet is full, but I have plans after, you know, all of that stuff is done. So hopefully we will see you back on the show.
I would be more than happy to come back. This was an absolute blast. This is honestly, not even saying this has been one of my favorite appearances on any show.
Love to hear it. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.